Say when. Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed. And remember, we are the Resistance, and we are so glad to have you with us this week. And I want to touch base, Eric, our producer, who is off to my side over here. Eric, did you get any bike miles in this last week when it was like 102 degrees?
Not very many, but I got a few.
I didn't get any.
Yeah, that's it's getting hot. And oddly, it's getting kind of cold in the mornings. The last few days has been in the 50s. So
yeah,
that's been...
I know, and my windows were steaming up. The humidity level wasn't as hot, but man, whatever happened, it was like, it was crazy looking out.
Yeah, it's getting kind of miserable. Like today it's not even 80 degrees, but the UV is like 10.
Oh yeah. So, I got burned. You probably can see it on my head. I got burned. I was outside yesterday for about 2 hours, and dummy me didn't put on sunscreen. So,
same boat.
So we have an update. We talked about Kevin. Now, if you've been watching the podcast, we know Kevin the squirrel, who has been chewing up his car wires, is no longer with us. He is sadly departed. But now we have a new culprit. It's not a squirrel this time, Eric. What are we having a problem with now at your house?
A sparrow flew in the garage, will not leave. So unless it is, I didn't even think about that, eating spiders and stuff, but I haven't seen it, so it's either just waiting to attack, or it is died and is somewhere in the garage. But
yeah, 458 Magnum might take care of that.
Well, I've got my scar. I thought I could, but I don't want to blow a giant hole through the side of the garage.
Or maybe a 470 Nitro Express or something.
Yeah, there you go.
That'll work. Well, you know, this week was interesting for me. As you know, I was doing the Muscle Magazine, that what was it, Muscle and Fitness Magazine contest, and I got into this thing in a joke, never thinking that I would get accepted to do this at my age, at almost 64. And some of you have been following. Thank you for your support. I made it through, I don't know, like 7 rounds of this thing. I made it all the way to the quarterfinals. And I needed to place first in the quarterfinals to make it to the semis, and I came in third. But that is way better. I didn't even expect to get like accepted into this thing. So it's kind of cool, you know, though, when you're kind of an old guy. And I was competing with guys, you know, some of them were a third of my age. They were like, you know, 21 years old. So, you know, it's going to be fun because today's guest, you know, we're going to be kind of showing some of these young guns. We're not dead yet. We're still kicking here. But today's guest, and I'm so excited to have Russell Thornberry with us today. Many of you know that name. You might have known it from Buckmasters Magazine. You might have known it from television shows or his music that he had for years. But you will not find a more quality guy. And a guy that loves God, loves his family, loves the outdoors. That's how I like to be introduced. But let me kind of just give you a little bit of a bio here. So this is the short version, because if I read the long version, the entire podcast would be his bio. It's that big. But Russell Thornberry, it says he wears many different hats in a variety of roles that combine for a most unique and interesting life. He is a renowned author, master storyteller. You're going to love his voice. A gifted songwriter and singer, a seasoned television personality, a professional outdoorsman, an ordained minister, and a devoted family man. And he has, and his team that he's had, have facilitated boot camps. Many of you remember Wild at Heart. You know, it was one of my life-changing books around 2000 when it came out. Had a huge impact on my life. And I know that he's very, very familiar with this and has led a lot of this stuff. You know, first of all, Russell, man, it's so good to have you with us. And it's so weird. And when I'm looking at your bio and your background, my kids used to always say to me, Dad, how do I explain what you do for a living? 'Cause you've worn like 1,000 hats.
Yeah.
And you've been good at them all. Tell us about, I mean, that's, your background is nuts.
I agree. And when I look at it myself, I'm scratching my head, and, I'd have to say, as varied and unusual as it's been, I can take really no planning credit for any of it, because how do you? You know, I would say that I have led a reactionary life to a great degree, and when one thing seemed to be coming to an end, something else popped up. Like, why don't we try that? And spin the game all the way through.
It is true, though. I was looking at your stuff and it's like, you know, starting, oh, first of all, I got to ask you this question. So the aspirations you had as a teenager, I'm thinking, was football.
100%.
But you kind of, I don't know if you shot yourself in the foot or what happened, but there was something with a foot.
You know, I didn't do it, but my best buddy did. It was an accident, and you don't plan stuff like that. But that put the skids to football, you know, at the speed of a bullet. And my dreams and aspirations were all wrapped up in that. And in an instant, they were gone. And so we faced the great now what.
What position were you playing?
I played a lot of different positions. I played fullback. I played defensive end. I did the snaps for punts, you know, and conversions, right, that kind of thing. So just kind of wherever I was needed, I guess.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I've been shot with a BB gun. And so, I've had an arrow break and just about go through my hand. Well, that wasn't a whole lot of fun. But yeah, never shot myself with that. But
no, I don't recommend it, actually.
Do you remember, it was shortly after you and I met for the first time, and I don't remember how many years ago. It's probably been 15 years ago now. And I was interviewing a bunch of different guys. Mm-hmm. I was doing a whitetail book that I was working on. Right. And there was some big names that I had a chance to become friends with. And some of them I became close friends with, but some of the names, for you listeners out there that were into whitetails, because again, many of you know that, Russell was the editor in chief for Buckmasters magazine. How many years were you doing that?
24.
Yeah. I knew it was a long time.
Yeah, it was.
But some of these names were, you know, Charlie Alsheimer, he's gone now. Deer and deer hunting. Most of you can remember Charlie. I mean, he was kind of like one of the pioneers so much within the magazine industry. Let me think. Dr. Dave Samuel. Does that name ring a bell?
Yes, I know him.
Bow Hunting Hall of Fame. I got to be there when he and Chuck Adams were inducted that night. That was an honor.
Yeah.
Now, do you know Don Higgins?
Yes, I remember that name.
Yep. Don, Chasing Giants podcast. Eddie Claypool. You might know that outdoor writer.
I know Eddie.
He's a heck of a hunter, do-it-yourself person.
Yeah, he sure is.
I think there was Bill Winky, who was with Midwest Whitetails. I think he still has that.
Yeah.
What did you know Wade Nolan?
Yes.
Yeah, Wade passed away about 4 years ago, I think it was now. He was a close friend with Whitetail University. Robert Hogue just passed away. He was the hunting.net. Yeah. And then who was there was one more. I'm trying to think who. Oh, Steve Chapman. Yeah, we've had Steve on here.
Yeah.
Great guy, quality guy.
Really, absolutely. Some of those guys I guided back in my outfitting tenure, and
So, how did you ever get started? Let's just kind of go back to your music days and kind of the progression. You shot yourself, or you got shot in the foot? Did you start singing after you got shot?
Yeah, it was a strange thing. While I was convalescing, and I had a cast up to my knee, and football was gone, and I was down in the dumps, to say the least. And I don't remember who the fellow was, but a guy came over to my house. It was kind of like the Snickers commercial, you know, not going anywhere, try this. And he brought a guitar over, and he said, I don't know if you play one of these or not, but it'd be something to do while you're going nowhere. And at first, I was very indignant. I thought, you bring me this box with strings on it, and that's going to be okay now that football's gone. But anyway, it sat there and I sat there, and then I got to fiddling around with it. And back in those days, you know, the music was pretty simple. And so I listened to some of the simple songs and tried to make sounds like they did, and then got infatuated with it. This was now, you know, back in the 60s, the folk era.
Right.
And so that's, you know, those old songs were simple. And I thought, if I can make the guitar sound like that. And then somewhere in that mix, I got really interested in writing, creating songs. And so eventually that sort of one obsession replaced another, I guess you could say. And I just got real serious about it. And you know, started playing the coffee house circuit in the South, getting to know a bunch of the other guys who did the same thing in the same area. And so that's kind of where the launch pad was and why.
Was this in Texas now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was from Corpus Christi originally, but I moved up to Houston. I worked with a trio down in South Texas, and we did some recording always in Houston. And so I got to know some of the people that were starting when I was, and it seemed like there was more opportunity there. And so I moved up to Houston and continued to, you know, pursue music with the coffee house thing, which was, you know, kind of what you did back in those days. And one night I was playing in Sand Mountain Coffee House in Houston, and in the audience, unknown to me, was the a fellow that was part of the management of the New Christy Minstrels at the time. And
oh yeah,
he heard me and asked me if I'd like to audition for him. And I thought, well, it's a stepping stone. It, you know, it wasn't really my music per se, but I said, okay. So I auditioned and got hired. And interestingly enough, Kenny Rogers and the First Edition, that whole group, actually were part of the New Christy Minstrels. And when they left, I was one of several people that were hired replacement for them. And so I did that. About a year's worth was all I could do. We were on the road every day, flying, doing concerts constantly. And I guess the fact at that point in time, the Christy Minstrels had sort of passed their prime. And so we were just basically there doing the old stuff, you know, for the people that really enjoyed them. And it was okay. But, you know, I think everybody that was a part of that and left was desired to do something more contemporary, ultimately, myself included. And so that's...
Yeah, tell us more of your journey. What happened? Because, I mean, Kenny Rogers, now we're talking a massive hitter there.
Yeah.
We're talking the Kenny Rogers, right? Like the gambler. Yeah, and
the one and only, absolutely.
The one and only. What a voice, too.
And he's from Houston, so, you know, I didn't know him well, but I knew him a little bit. Funny segue, after I was in Canada for a number of years, and that's another story, but Kenny and the First Edition came up to Alberta and did some performing up there, and so I got to open the show for them. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
I saw him, I think it was... I think it was the fall of 1981. He was at Market Square Arena, which I think was Elvis Presley's last concert location. I think it was there.
Wow.
But I got to see him, and who was he traveling with at the time? It was a big country singer, solo female artist. And wasn't Dolly. Mm-hmm. Can't remember who it was, but he was amazing.
You know, an amazing guy. Amazing
so then where did you end up moving to? California, or did you stay?
Well, here's what happened. When I left the New Christy Minstrels, I left them in Denver. And I hung around Denver a little bit, you know, played some dates down there as a solo singer-songwriter. And as it turned out, several other people left right after I did, left the Christies. And the ones that left were all kind of based out of Los Angeles. And so I got a call one day and said, hey, we're out here looking to do something new. Why don't you come and do it with us? And I thought, okay, well, that's kind of, you know, I wanted to do something more contemporary. So there was a chance. And so I went out there and worked with these kids. And I guess we had been together maybe a month. And and we were doing some original material and working them out. And I guess if you put everything end to end, we probably had about 20 or 25 minutes of material, you know, if you just, right. And so, somehow or another, a talent agency invited us to come and do a audition. and we did it, and they really liked us, and they said, okay, we want to put you on the road opening for Henry Mancini.
Wow.
And it was like, that was the good news. The bad news, we didn't have enough material to open for anybody. So we made up this story that we were all booked up, you know, until such and such a day, whereby we thought we would, you know, be able to stand on our own. And so when that date came, this agency said, okay. And our first gig, really, they sent us to Hawaii. And we did some concerts over there. And in our final week in Hawaii, we were doing concerts for the military folks, like R&R from Vietnam and stuff like that. And so we had to do about five concerts in 3.5 days, I guess. So we were really hopping. And at that time, I got the Asian flu, which was going around, and it was nasty stuff. And by the time we left Hawaii, I had lost my voice completely. And eustachian tube in one ear had collapsed, and I was sick. And so I got back to L.A., and so the group sitting on their hands waiting for us to get well. But I wasn't making much progress. And finally, this doctor that I'd been seeing said, you know, he said, I think more than anything, you need to go somewhere where there's fresh air. He said, this green air in L.A. is not helping your cause. And so I was trying to think of where I might go that there was some fresh air. And it reminded me of one guy that I knew in Canada and a little town in Saskatchewan. And I had met him in Denver right after I left the Christie Minstrels, and he was down there going to some kind of a computer school. Anyway, he liked my music, and we got to be friends in a short time. And he kept saying, you got to come up here. You got to come up there. And so I thought about it, and I thought, well, surely the air is clear up there. And, of course, I'm always looking out of the corner of my eyes for outdoor opportunities.
Right.
And so anyway, I went up there for a week and got well immediately. But before I could get back to Los Angeles, through just totally unplanned and unexpected, met people that offered me some musical opportunities that I never dreamed I was going to run into. I was offered a writer artist recording opportunity contract. I was offered to host a musical variety show on television, and so all this stuff happened like you couldn't plan it. It was just You run into somebody that knows somebody. And this was all sounding better and better. Plus, the fishing was out of this world.
Isn't the new Alone? Sorry, this is a left turn, Clyde. Isn't the new? Did you ever watch the series Alone?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I think the new one is in northern Saskatchewan.
Well, you can get real alone there. I've done it.
Yeah. I was just watching these guys being dropped off, and I remember looking at that, and I went, "That's northern Saskatchewan. That's up there."
Yeah, I know a little bit more about that than I wanted to know. That's another story. But anyway, so I went back to L.A. and said, okay, I'm checking out. You know, I've got this other thing happening. And so I went back to Canada and totally unexpected, met this Canadian gal that captured my heart, and she's still capturing it. So we're into this about 54 years. It looks like it's going to work out.
And then so somehow you got from – well, you got from Canada back to the U.S. and Colorado. Then you went back to Canada, then back to Colorado. Am I getting that right?
Well, no. I left L.A. to go up, you know, for a week of fresh air. And then I came back to Los Angeles, gathered up my things and checked out. And then I went back up to Canada. And about a year after I went up there, Charlene and I were married. All this musical opportunity was just falling in my lap. And, you know, everything that I had hoped or dreamed for, I was able to do. And so it was like, you know, once again, nothing you could plan, but I had a good deal of musical success. You know, if you want to, what does that mean? It means that I got to do a lot of concerts and worked with a lot of really good musicians that mostly Americans that came to Canada were doing tours. I opened for some of them and then had my own concert opportunity, which I did across the country, and then the television show. And so it was like, and the recording part of it. And, you know, it's fun. You know, I'm a creative person. And so it was a thrill for me to be able to write a song, record a song and see it succeed, you know? And so, you know, I don't mean to be braggadocious about it, but several of those songs went to the top. And so anyway, that's kind of where the music went. And it was a thing where I have to underpin everything I'm telling you about my younger years, that I was a very driven person. I grew up without a dad and very insecure, and fell into the performance trap where I felt like my only value was in what I could do. And when you fall into that trap, the thing that you do is for dear life. You think that's, if you don't do it better than somebody else, you have no value. So that's what was driving it. Problem was, now segue to, I have a wife and two children that are sitting home wondering when they're going to see dad again. Okay. And it put a horrible stress on our family, almost crumbled, almost. And so I had some real serious decisions to make. And it was like I had to decide whether I wanted to keep chasing this dream or if I wanted to do the thing that I swore I would never do, and that was to abandon my family. And so this came to another real crunch in that, okay, I better find something else to do if I'm not going to mess this up completely. So at that point I started looking elsewhere.
So then transitioning then from the music world to the outdoors, how did that all kind of happen?
Well, this is, you know, strange is about to get stranger. Okay. When I was a kid growing up, even before probably I could read, I would see these magazines on the shelf with this giant moose or grizzly bear, something like that. And that just intrigued me. And all my life, I wanted to go north. You know, I wanted to experience the northern wilderness and all this. And so anyway, along came a guy that I knew through the music business. And he said, hey, you want to go moose hunting? And it was like, oh, do I want to go moose hunting? Yeah, like for 30 years, I've wanted to go moose hunting. So he said, well, he and his brother-in-law were going up into northern Alberta, and I could come along. And man, I mean, you know, like I'm an adventure-seeking guy, and this was just too much for my mind. And so I went along with him, and we got in the far north. And they had a little terrain machine that we took back into the wilderness on a road. It was a winter road that you couldn't travel. I mean, it was not pavement or anything. It was just dirt track, but you couldn't go in there. It was a logging road that they used after freeze up to get back in. And so this was in early September, and it was boggy, and we're getting this little machine stuck, and they're throwing me a rope, and I certainly realized in a hurry why I was invited. I was the tow truck. But anyway, it, you know, being young and stupid and all the rest that goes with it. So we're going along, and then as we're going in, and we end up going in about 15 miles, so, you know, and my friend's brother-in-law shot a bull, and it was pretty warm still in September. And so we made a camp that night, and it was determined that they've got to get this bull back out of the woods and into a cooler somewhere. So, but the three of us were capacity load for that little machine. So I volunteered to be the one that stayed behind. I was glad to stay behind. And so I'm out there in the middle of absolutely nowhere, and everybody's getting up in the dark in the morning, getting ready to make this trip. And I thought, well, I said, you know, I think I'm just going to go out here and see if I can find a moose and when the sun comes up. And they're throwing everything together to leave. And I said, just be sure you don't, you know, don't take my matches, my sleeping bag, the stuff I might need. Oh, no, no problem. Well, they left. And I was out, I don't know, maybe a half mile from camp. And the sky got black and came down on top of the trees. And it started snowing like nothing I've ever seen. A freak blizzard that came in.
Wow.
And it shut down northern Alberta completely.
Wow.
Including my compadre's ability to come back for me.
Yeah. And you're by yourself.
I'm way by myself. And don't have any warm clothes because, heck, you know, early November or September, you don't need them.
Yeah.
And so I came back and the snow's piling up. It's already ankle deep and you couldn't see 50 yards, you know. And I came back and, oh, my sleeping bag's gone. My matches are gone. They accidentally took them. And so it's a 15-mile walk, mostly through Muskeg, to get back to the Fort McMurray Highway. Then it's 15 miles of gravel road to a settlement. And I'm sitting there thinking, what are the odds of me being able to do that? You know, I was young and healthy, but still, anyway, I was sort of lost in thought of, is this the last great adventure? And so I'm standing there contemplating life or what comes next. And I caught motion out of the corner of my eye, and I'm looking, and through the snow, I see what looks like a human coming my way. And this little short fellow with a worn red cap and a butt of a wet roll your own in the corner of his mouth came walking up to me and said, you're a long way from home, ain't you? And I said, brother, you have no idea how far from home I am. And he said, come with me. Your friends won't be back. And I said, that's the best offer I've had since this. Well, he was a trapper named Marion Diesel who trapped up in that country. And he had heard the machine and he knew we were there. And he was coming over to see what we'd been up to, I guess, not expecting to find somebody, but he did. And he said, follow me. And I did. And I followed him about a half mile to this little tiny cabin out there in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
That Marion was 5'6". He built the cabin as high as he could reach to put the log. I couldn't stand up in it, but I didn't care. It was warm. And I was saved. And I got to know this little man who was just, he was living history. And he had come in a boxcar as a kid in 1905 to Alberta, and his people homesteaded there, and he'd lived in the bush all his life. And anyway, it's the stuff that he had done made me realize that we don't really understand what mental toughness is. It's all gone, man. You know, he captained a paddle wheel steamer on the Mackenzie, if you can imagine, and had crossed Great Bear Lake in the winter with dog teams, and, you know, just done things that I didn't know there's any living people like that. Anyway, to try to condense this a little bit, and it was cold. It was brutally cold, and the snow was, you know, up hip deep by now.
Jeez.
But I'm sitting in this cabin warm. I can't communicate with anybody. My poor little wife didn't know what happened to me. And I'm sitting there drinking tea one evening, and he walks over to the door and opens it and walks outside. And the next thing I hear is this mournful squall. And I thought, dear Lord, now what? And I ran to the door, and he just stand there with his hands in his pockets. And I said, "What was that?" And he said, "Well, you said you wanted a moose, didn't you?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Okay." He said, "I'm just calling." He said, "It would be here in the morning." And in the morning, five of them were there.
Wow.
I shot the biggest one. And I said to him, do you know what this experience is worth in dollars and cents? I said, "Do you know what people would pay to experience what?" He said, "Well, I never thought about it." And I said, "Do you want to think about it?" And he said, "Well, what are you saying?" I said, "I know people that'll come and pay you so much money for this." And so anyway, I brought the people. He taught me how to guide them. And we became partners in this little guiding endeavor, which would have been 1973. And that's how I got started in the outfitting business.
That is an amazing story.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience and phenomenal human being.
I was reading some Oswald Chambers, I think it was 2 days ago, and he was talking about these storms. And it was basically, unless we experience these and walk through them, mm-hmm. we're never going to be shaped how he wants us to be shaped.
Yeah, yeah.
What I mean, it is so amazing. When I listen to your story, and you know, I think many of us can go autobiographical, and we begin to take things and look at our own lives. I mean, it was a different decade when I grew up from when you did. I mean, it wasn't that much different. We're not that, maybe 15 years or something apart. I don't know what we are, but it's not that much different. But
well, I mean, stories,
yeah, and I'll be 64 coming up here. But the same. I mean, it's weird. I'm sitting here going, you know, I started off in music. I love the outdoors. I went to Alaska and worked in one of my summers when I wasn't doing music because I always wanted to go up there and experience it, just like you were talking about. Yeah. And lo and behold, I went back to music, and slowly that kind of did the crescendo, and the outdoors began to crescendo, and that began to mix all these things together. And
yeah. Well, I've noticed that too, you know, the similarities in our pathways, let's say.
Well, there's definitely a kindred spirit. When I listen to you, I wish I had a lot of the wisdom and knowledge. I think we all do back then that we have now, like with families and, you know, what's most important is relationships.
Yeah.
You know, and no more than our relationship with God.
That's right.
But well, let me kind of just ask you a couple questions. There's a few things I wanted to kind of touch on before we kind of, you know, head down that closing path. Not quite there yet, but there was a song. I was looking up your bio stuff, you know, and I'm going, "Oh my gosh, this guy could be my older brother." It was so funny. And I was reading. Now, I wrote a song a long time ago. It's called "Screw Loose," right?
Yeah.
And the chorus was, I'm trying to think what the chorus. She must have a screw loose. She's not playing with a full deck. Well, the bread's not done. Could she be so dumb? She must have been out in the sun. She must have a screw loose. I think she's a quart low. She must have been sick, or she was hit with a brick. I think her head's just too thick. That was the chorus.
Yeah.
Funniest song I ever wrote. So I'm looking at this and going, I wonder if we ever wrote stuff. I came across a song of yours today, and I told you I was going to ask you about this.
Yeah.
And it's titled, "I Got Hemorrhoids on My Heart from Loving You."
Yeah.
Where did the inspiration come from on that?
It was romantic, as you can tell.
Yes.
But I dreamed it. I dreamed that song and woke up and wrote it down. After formally getting out of the commercial music world, the next phase for me was writing prose and some books and things, and I found that I most got the biggest kick out of writing humor, because there's something that happens that I'm intrigued by the fact that a person can sit down and write something on a piece of paper that's going to make somebody laugh 1,000 miles away, you know. And so it kind of started with I had written a autobiography of my outdoor happenings called Bucks, Bulls, and Belly Laughs many years ago, of things that are just too bizarre to believe. I mean, I wouldn't believe them if I hadn't lived them.
And guys, you can go online, just Google his name, Russell Thornberry, and you'll find you have like 12 books out. I mean, there's quite a few.
Yeah, I guess something like that. I don't remember, but I did write a couple of humorous books that I really enjoyed that, and ended up doing the same with music and just for laughs. And I guess if you're taking writing seriously, like I did, humor, it never struck me as sort of, it was a frivolous thing, you know, and then after I wrote Belly Laughs, I had grandmothers buying 8 and 10 copies to send. And I kept hearing this word, we need to laugh. And I had never thought of laughter or humor as a need, but once that settled on me, I had to agree. It's a good medicine, you know? And so I started writing these silly songs and playing them here and there just to make people laugh. And it was a lot of fun and not near the pressure of trying to make a hit, as you well know. Yeah.
Yep. So you were telling me you had a Dipnet story.
Yeah.
And I don't want us to kind of get, you know, wrapping this thing up yet, but until you tell me now, I do want you to kind of take us out and close us. Is this the same story? Or is this a different one?
Same story as what?
Well, when you mentioned you had a great Dipnet story, and then when I had messaged you earlier, I said, man, would you honor us by having some kind of a closing story today?
Oh, yeah. Well, I do have and it's not a humorous story, but it's, you know, God speaks to me through a lot of things that I experience in the outdoors that I think, oh, I see this relates to life in a real, real way. And the story that I mentioned to you was that I moved 2 years ago from Alberta to Colorado, live up here in the mountains. And I'm a fly fishing nut. Okay. I love it. And so when I got to Colorado, one of the things that I noticed moving water is my thing. And so as I'd get out on the stream and see other fishermen, I was realizing that my net was a lot bigger than their net. And then I began to realize, well, that's because the fish I was used to catching in Alberta,
right?
You know, so it's a, but, and so I thought about this and I thought, well, yeah, I guess this big old net is for what I'm seeing and catching, you know, I have to haul something this heavy around. So I went out to 11 Mile Canyon one day on the South Platte River. And I left my big net home and took the little net. And so I cast down a fly down between these two boulders where the water was really pinched down and my line stopped. And so I naturally responded as you would, give a little snap of the rod. And it was obvious that I was hung up on the bottom. And so I'm yanking on this thing, trying to get it to come loose, and kind of frustrated when I realized that the bottom was now starting to move. And I lifted this fish up and we saw each other about the same time. And I don't know which one of us most surprised. This is a rainbow that I'm going to say conservatively 28 inches long. And I mean, he took off upstream 50 yards, my little reel just screaming, ran around a big boulder and hung up, and that was it. And I'm just in a daze. So I slowly waded up to the boulder, kept reeling up line, went around the boulder, and lo and behold, he's still on. And so I got him out in open water. Now I can work him. I just got a 3-weight rod. So this was a load, okay? And so I got him up into ankle deep water and he wouldn't fit in my little net. Mm-hmm. I kept trying, I couldn't even get his head in it. And finally I broke him off. And here's the analogy I got, you know, it's like, what does the word say about hope deferred makes the heart sick? That's what hit my mind right there. And I thought, okay, I had allowed myself and my expectations to be dummied down by what I saw, and then embrace the dummy down, and the opportunity of a lifetime shows up. And I am ill prepared because I'm dummied down. So it was a lesson to me in hope. And my takeaway is this: I still carry my big net proudly, but my motto is come to this: walk softly and carry a big net.
Yes, I could see that. I saw that coming. Yeah. Oh, you know, it was funny. I was thinking a minute ago about, we were talking about how our paths, you know, there have been very similar things. And many times we're going, okay, God, what do you got next? It's not like, you know, so many people go into a career and I'm going to be a teacher. I'm going to do that for 35 years. I'm going to retire. I'm going to move to Florida. And they kind of have their life planned out. And that's never been me. And it doesn't sound like it was ever you either.
No, I had no leading of any kind in terms of how to do life. So I came at it as an amateur.
Well, and my dad was the teacher for 35 years, retired and moved to Florida years ago. And so you kind of grew up thinking, well, am I supposed to be just like that? And as you were talking about this, I thought about a story I haven't thought about in years. I had caught a trout. I was on Elk Creek in northwestern Pennsylvania. And you know how the trout, you get out there in the sun, you can see them turning on their side. And I saw this great rainbow out there, and I caught him. But when I went to get him off, you know, I'm trying to hold one thing, get my net down. He got off, but it snapped my line.
Yeah.
And he must have been rubbing across a rock, weakened, whatever had happened. And I thought that was a great rainbow. And so I decided not to hit the waters right there a little bit, because it was quite a bit of fighting going on. I moved down, you know, and I moved down for maybe the next 30 minutes. I moved back up there, son of a gun. I hammered this rainbow, got him all the way in. And it was the one I had lost. He still had the hook and what piece of the line left in his mouth.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this so many times, guys, as you're thinking about like calling, like we're talking about kind of back and forth, we can kind of relate, but I know there's a lot of, all of us, as we're still breathing, we're going, God, what do you have for us next?
Yeah.
And so we're kind of looking at life and we're going, well, I just feel like I just kind of lost what I was supposed to do or what I loved or whatever. And then God moves you over here and then he brings you back and he goes, no, I just needed to let those waters kind of calm down a little bit. And because I got another plan for you here.
Yeah, I hear that. I sure do.
I mean, you think about it. You got shot in the foot. I mean, you start going down through all these touring things that were happening, moving, the storm.
Yeah.
And, you know, what has come out the other end is, so to speak, didn't sound quite right there, but it's...
No, I agree with you. It's just like you can't see it at the time because of the pressure of the moment. You know, you're thinking more of survival, but when you look back on it, you see a guidance that you could never have planned on. And I feel like that a lot of the things that I tried that didn't work, or I shouldn't say didn't work, but that I backed away from finally, was God's leading. Things that would not have prospered me in the right way in the long haul.
And something you've done for me that you don't even probably realize, but, you know, being in men's ministry and being out there doing it full time, especially as a speaker, as a writer, sometimes you can feel kind of alone because you're speaking to tens of thousands of men, right, every year. But when you're off there and you're back home, you don't, unless you stay really connected. Yeah. And that's something I always try to, you know, have your band of brothers, guys. You got to have that.
Boy, that's right.
Something that you'll do every now and then. I'll mention I'm going to be going somewhere. And we didn't talk about this. You probably remember what you will type to me as I'm getting ready to leave. Do you remember what it is?
I think so, but
three words.
Tell me.
Give them heaven.
Give them heaven. Yeah, that's right.
You always just say, give them heaven.
Well, you're really right, because whether you realize it at the moment or not, but in ministry, you're pouring yourself out continually, and you can only pour so much out before that refreshing has to come. And it's so critical to have even a small nucleus of people who get you, who you get to be entirely yourself, who you can be vulnerable with without, you know, worrying about being judged or something like that. And so,
well, two guys today, I told him this morning, we pray for each other over the text. And I said, you were going to be on the podcast today. And they both of them were like, I don't know if he'd remember me or not, but one of them was a guy named Roger Medley who lives just outside of Colorado Springs. He's been with Bear Archery for years and Bass Pro Shops. And then another one was Brent Barton from Eagle. I think it's Eagle Christian Church is where he was. And you had spoken up there for a game dinner.
Okay.
And you just had an impact on their life. Well, and that's just
so bad.
Yeah. And we don't know sometimes how many people we are impacting with our life and with our story. I did a podcast maybe 2 months ago and I called it To Be Told. Your lives are to be told.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Would you do me a favor if you would and be honored, just kind of just take us as we're kind of closing here, something that you would love for the listeners to be able to hear. Yeah. Just kind of take us on a story, on a journey here.
All right. Well, what I have learned the hard way, I'll credit the beginning of this business with John Eldridge. First time I went to one of his Wild at Heart meetings, he walked out, and I was pastoring at the time, which is another story. But for now, and his first thing he said is, your heart is ultimately important, and if you don't take care of your heart, you will not be able to take care of the hearts of others. And that, for some reason, is probably the most necessary statement for every pastor to hear, because you're geared to, you've got to deal with everybody else, and it's almost selfish, you might think, to put yourself first. But I started pondering that, and I realized that I wasn't taking care. I mean, I thought the concept was foreign. And the more I followed that, the more I realized I do not know how to live in the moment. All I live in is what's got to be done next, the pace, you know, who's waiting and all this kind of stuff. And so I thought, okay, how do I learn to live in the moment? And we were in Alberta and we lived on a, right on the banks of a little stream there that has some little brook trout in it. And so I decided, because I love moving water, that I was going to go every day the weather would permit, take my lawn chair and sit there by that creek for 30 minutes and let everything go. And no matter what was pressing, I was. And so I did that, and it was the most therapeutic thing. And even to this day, like yesterday, I was taking a friend from Texas up to 11 Mile Canyon in the Dream Stream fly fishing. And he said, okay, where do we start? And I said, you start anywhere you want. I carry a little bitty pipe in my vest. And the first thing I do is I get to the spot where I'm thinking I might fish. And I sit down and I light that pipe and I don't move until it's all smoked out, about 15 minutes. And all I want to do is I want to get to feel and hear and let this soak into me. Even catching the fish is of less importance to me than to absorb. You know, God gives us all this beauty and it brings a rest to the soul if you'll let it. And so I'm at 80 years old, I'm still most of all trying to live in the moment so that when somebody else's heart does need to be taken care of, I'm refreshed enough to do it in the right spirit.
Well, I wanted to just kind of bring it back with this at the end too. And you guys, I know if you get online and you get some of his books, whether it be the Belly Laugh books or some of the adventures or different things that he's got out there. I don't know about you. I need to find a way to get away too. The outdoors has provided that for me. That's my passion. And I think for a lot of you guys are listening to this podcast, part of the reason you listen to it is because we do talk a lot about outdoors and adventure, but we talk a lot about God. We talk about the need for brotherhood and relationships. And even though, you know, Russell and I live probably about 1100 miles apart from each other, you can hear the similarities. You can hear that there's a brotherhood through, whether it be the outdoors, whether it be through God, our love for this country, whatever we've got. But take your relationships and mm-hmm. nurture them, because they are the most important thing you have.
Yeah.
Those two guys that I was telling you about, my buddies this morning that I was praying for back and forth, you know, we've been on a lot of adventures together. And so there is a relationship. There is a closeness. One of them was talking about, you know, the need for reviving courage in this country.
Boy, isn't that right?
Oh, you know, and I try not to go down that road too much. And you see my posts when I'm posting. I once in a blue moon, I'll say something if something stirs me enough when it has to do with our country. Right. Not to say it doesn't happen every day in my heart and in my soul, but just weighing my words very carefully.
Right.
You know, and in this world we live in. But the one thing I want you to do, you guys to know, is that we do need to revive courage.
Yeah.
We do need to awaken each other's souls to the things that God has for them. And I hope what you hear today through all this kind of stuff is that God has a plan for your life. Like that fish that got off that I caught again, like the one that he was talking about with these different nets, that God allowed him to see that fish just for a moment.
Yeah.
You know, below the surface. And he saw, this is an amazing fish. And it was like, he's saying, follow me. The adventure will never end. And guys, I just want to say this. Many of you out there right now, maybe you're sitting in a cubicle, maybe you're driving your car, your truck, you're on your way to work right now, and you're going, I need something different in my life.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not that God will change that job or the opportunity he's got for you, but he allows you to see it through a different lens that you never saw before, because there is ministry happening right where you are right now. And I think it's important that we remember that if we can stay in those places long enough, like Russell talked about the storms at the very beginning of this thing, he sent a man in the middle of a storm and it changed his life.
Yeah. Yeah, saved it and changed it.
Yeah. And that's why I do this podcast, because I do know a man and he gave his life for you and he has an adventure for you, and he had an adventure for us, and we're following it, and we will until the day we take our last breath.
That's right.
Buddy, thank you.
Thank you
for being on here.
Been an honor. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and we'll put Russell's information, you know, on the link for the podcast. We'll put his, you know, his website. He has some amazing things, knives and different things that he makes, that he hand, just beautiful stuff. But we'll make sure all that's on there. Again, we want to hear from you guys. You can go to podcast@unleashed.men. You can find us on Spotify or Amazon or wherever. You can find podcasts, YouTube, but we want you to come back and remember that when a man knows who he is in Christ, that he's been created in the image of the living God, when he is no longer held captive by the opinions of others or cares whether he lives or dies, that man is now extremely dangerous. Well, dangerous for good, because yeah. He's been unleashed.
That's right.
Brother, you are loved, and keep up the pace. Stay the course.
I'm going as fast as I can.
And you keep giving them heaven, buddy.
I'll do that. Same to you, brother.
Bless you. All right, man. We'll see you guys next time.